the words "were murdered" followed by the name Chisel. Whitechapel with ITFC audio description. A candle flickers by a stone angel. Rupert Penry Jones. A foxed poster reads 120 guineas reward. Hamlet of Ratcliffe murder. Phil Davis. Steve Pemberton. A harsh white neon light. London at night. Tower Bridge silhouetted against a black sky. A sign on a building reads Ben Salter. A man's hand smooths out dark pinstripe cloth. A chalk line's drawn on it against a wooden ruler. A late 20s woman with high cheekbones and dark hair pins cloth to a tailor's dummy. In a dimly lit room, 40-ish Ben Salter looks at a clock and goes out to the corridor. He's wearing a russet red embroidered waistcoat. He goes to the kitchen, lifts the lid of a large earthenware jar and peers inside.
Georgie?
Yes, sir?
Where's the food?
I put it there earlier.
I don't know where it all goes.
Georgie, be a sweetheart and get everyone something to eat.
Yes, Mr. Salter.
He hands coins to dark-haired Georgie Fox.
Thank you.
In the gloom of the corridor, she puts on a short check jacket and undoes the bolts on the front door. Salter goes back to cutting cloth. Georgie steps into a dark alley. A party in a pub. A banner over the stage reads, "Congratulations." A conga line dances through the pub. Fair-haired, early 40s D.I. Joseph Chandler looks bewildered as the line passes him. He raises his glass to the revelers. Georgie's striding down a deserted street. A taxi pulls up at a junction behind her.
Open the door!
It's open!
I can't.
Good riddance to you!
Freak!
Good riddance!
A young woman in denim shorts and jacket gets out. Back at the pub, Chandler's alone with his beer. 50s DS Ray Miles joins him.
You must love that beer. You've been holding it all night.
Elegant Chandler sips at the full glass.
I'll get you another one.
That's a pint and a half of lager and a white wine, please.
Chandler glances across the bar at the dancers.
What makes a great detective?
Guts, legwork. Contacts?
I was thinking experience.
Yeah, well, obviously, that comes with time.
What if you could have 200 years of experience? What kind of detective would you be?
One gagging for retirement.
No, no, really, listen. What if we could use the past as a map to guide us through difficult investigations, for inspiration, insight, as a cautionary tale?
You expecting another copycat? I don't
know. No, not copycats. I'm talking about knowing the history of crime and using it to our advantage.
Yeah, very clever. Thanks. But you know how I feel about books.
I was thinking we could do with a researcher.
Chandler nods towards late 40s bow-tied Edward Buchan.
No.
Yes.
You serious?
Yes.
Miles shuffles off. Georgie arrives at a busy bagel shop.
Poor Sam and Rita.
Hi. There's a queue.
She pays the woman.
I'm a regular, not a tourist.
Okay, you are. Everyone waits.
Not me.
Bitch.
Tosser.
She leaves the shop. The 30-ish guy watches her. He has a neatly trimmed beard and wears a peaked John Lennon-style cap. He waits a moment, then leaves and follows her down the street. A figure's behind her in the deserted street. Karaoke at the pub.
Don't you have the confidence to run an investigation without Buck?
Of course I do, don't you? Ridiculous.
But you could have anyone you wanted as a researcher. You could have a sharp young graduate, someone pretty, brighten up the office.
The Buckan has passion. He loves crime history, and he'll work for tea and biscuits.
Don't go back there. The bridesmaids are getting awfully grabby.
On your end, be it.
Miles gets up, leaving Chandler with Buchan. Georgie gets back to Salter's bespoke tailoring for gentlemen. She puts her key in the door. It won't open and the corridor inside's in darkness. She steps back and looks up at the house.
Hello?
A figure on all fours scuttles about.
Hello, I've got your bagels that you asked me to get. Hello? Come on, open the door. Oh, this isn't funny, open the door.
She takes out her mobile. An old Bakelite phone rings inside. A figure emerges in the gloom behind her. She looks through the letterbox.
Get up, you assholes.
She stands upright, turns, and sees the figure slowly approaching.
Open the door! Please, just open the door! Get away from me!
A policeman.
What's all the noise about?
Anyway, this is the last dance for anyone still wanting to pole, so come on, grab someone and dance!
Go ahead, Seth! Pick someone and dance!
DC Mansell. DC Kent slumped on Chandler's table. He sits up, perbs written on his forehead. The policeman smashes the glass at Salters and unlocks the door. Georgie steps in and he follows. At Mansell's wedding reception, Miles is dancing with a woman. Chandler's alone in the deserted saloon bar. He scans around him, then leaves. Georgie.
Mr. Salter? Aiden!
The policeman follows her through the dark rooms. She tries a light switch.
Right, where's the fuse box?
She shows him, then makes her way alone down the narrow corridor. Halfway along, she stops, looks up, and wipes her forehead.
Feels like it's raining in here.
The light comes on. She looks up at the ceiling where a large splatter of blood drips down.
Ah!
On the floor, Salter's head lies in a pool of blood. The bloodied bodies of her three male co-workers are in other rooms.
Oh my God!
Blood drips off a lampshade. Day, the crime scene set up outside. Miles and Chandler.
You're still drunk from last night.
It still is last night. You called before I got to bed. Didn't leave with anyone, did you? All those bridesmaids going begging?
Focus, please.
So what's this one then? The return of Dr. Crippen?
Dr. Crippen only killed one woman, his wife, and buried her dismembered body in a cellar.
Swat.
Miles and Chandler get into protective overalls and latex gloves, then enter the building.
Right.
Dr. Llewellyn walks up.
What have we got?
Four dead, one in each room. Heads caved in.
It's a massacre.
Well, the only multiple murders I've attended have been of families.
Mad dads.
Enmeshment. Well, the murders are the extension of a desire for suicide. But this is different.
She leads them through the Georgian house.
No suicide to be seen here.
A flash of brilliant white as a police photographer takes pictures of the bodies. The fourth body of a young man lies face down amid rivulets of blood. Chandler looks distraught and turns away.
We've locks and bolts on all the doors and windows. State-of-the-art alarm system.
No forced entry, the shop was secure.
Whoever did this was invited in.
Yes.
Chandler looks around and notices a rectangle of daylight from a narrow, open doorway. An old poster reads £50 reward, horrid murder. A drawing of a Georgian house with a shop front. A grotesque black and white sketch of a face. For Chandler, everyone in the incident room looks rough.
Right, everyone. Attention, please. Thank you. The murders took place here, at Ben Salter's. Ben Salter, Stuart Middleton, Aidan Harris, and Archie Pugh. These are the four victims. Doors and windows were all locked, no forced entry. This was not a raid or a robbery. The killer was invited in. He was known to them. Ben Salter managed to build a successful business in a highly competitive market. You don't get to do that without making a few enemies. We also need to look at every family member and friend who might bear a grudge.
A grudge?
This is a huge undertaking. There's a lot of information to process. Be accurate. Be vigilant.
Hello?
Kent, I want you to take the lead on all the family and friends.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Buchan arrives.
I made it.
His photo ID reads police researcher.
Don't let it go to your head. You're still a civilian.
Of course. Show me where my desk is and we'll make a start.
Absolutely. Follow me.
He trundles along with a pot plant and a shopping trolley.
Mansell, you too.
Yes, sir.
Just give me your hand, Joe.
The basement.
I want you to research home invasions, mass murders. Anything that might help inform our investigation. You're in here.
Oh, I thought we'd be sharing an office.
Chandler turns on the dim light, the gloomy rooms piled high with document boxes.
It's the Met's crime archive. It's being digitized page by page, but then the budget was cut and the project was shelved. It's going into storage, so I volunteered to take it.
Do you know what you have here? This is treasure.
I knew you'd like it.
I will be like Atlas, carrying the weight of your investigations.
It's all been dumped in no particular order, just a huge mess.
Oh, hi, DC Meg Riley, pleased to meet you.
Riley's a keen historical reenactor, so you two should have a lot in common.
Oh.
What era?
War of the Roses, always the busty wench.
Well, henceforth you will be known as Beck and Call. Now, who's going to fetch me a coffee?
Buchan turns away and Riley and Mansell share a look. Georgie's in an informal interview room with Miles and Chandler. An officer brings her coffee. Georgie looks traumatized.
Who would want them all dead?
Don't know. No one.
You make excellent suits. All bespoke.
Sorry?
She stares at her restless hands in her lap.
Who are your customers?
Stylists. Working for bands. We do a lot of skinny indie boys. And artists. It is Whitechapel after all. And businessmen. You know, Russians.
What kind of business?
I don't know, Russian business.
Miles leans back and Chandler looks surprised.
Did Ben Salter have any unhappy customers?
Who?
No complaints? Grievances?
No, you don't understand. Ben was an amazing tailor. He could make any man look 20 pounds thinner and 3 inches taller. Everyone loved him. He only made friends, not enemies. All the guys were lovely. The only person who wasn't was me.
She doesn't look at them.
I always thought I was better than everyone else, you know? I went to St. Martin's and everyone came to see my final show. I've been a cast iron bitch my whole life. I've never cared about the people I've offended or upset. If anyone deserved to die last night, it was me.
In the mortuary, the bodies are lined up in body bags on trolleys. Dr. Llewellyn's with them. Chandler and Miles are on the other side of the glass. She unzips one of the body bags to reveal the man's face.
In the 19th century, autopsies took place in the pub, surrounded by gawkers. And God, some things have changed.
Like DNA.
The crime scene is a business. Customers in and out, tradesmen, you name it. It's a forensics nightmare. Plus, they were attacked from behind. No chance to defend themselves. No struggle. Each one was ambushed.
So no physical contact between the killer and his victims except for the weapon itself.
Four dead and there's nothing we can use.
Wait.
She brings up an image of a wound on the screen behind them.
Each blow to the head was delivered with such force that part of the skull was pushed into the brain, leaving a hole.
Which is good for us, because that hole is an imprint of the weapon. A hammer.
Find the hammer, find the killer.
The city by day. Chandler enters the incident room where Kent's by a whiteboard. There are notes beneath the shots of each victim.
What have we got?
Lots of friends. Lots.
hundreds on the social networks, plenty of real ones too. No enemies, though. From what I can gather, Ben Salter's an all-round nice guy. His family's a bit more complicated, though. His dad, John, has got a family from the first marriage. They've been arguing over money.
Normal family squabbles or motive?
I don't know yet. His family's huge.
OK.
Young Kent looks awkward.
Good work.
Thanks.
Wells?
Yes, well, we're racking them up. One of the apprentices, Archie Pugh, was a cokehead. He also had debts. He owed quite a lot of money to quite a lot of people. We've got the names of interested parties. Could be worth a look.
Who are the others?
Aidan Harris. He got into a fight in a nightclub a week ago, trying to break up an argument between his mate and one of the local crew with a reputation to keep up. Threats were made to Aidan, but he didn't take it seriously.
Maybe he should have.
Yeah, maybe. We've got uniforms rounding up the faces. We'll see.
Customers?
Yes, artists, a few bands, a couple of dodgy Russians that we're going to have a look at. Otherwise, we'll see what the door-to-door brings up.
All right.
Tall, slender Chandler wears a well-cut suit and tie. He stands studying the details on the whiteboards while drinking his coffee. He goes to the basement where Mansell and Riley are heaving boxes about.
Where's Buck?
Mansell looks annoyed and nods his head in the direction of another room.
Ed.
Oh, what time is it? So easy to lose track down here.
It's six.
Huh. I've missed lunch there. Never mind.
Listen, we're swamped. Too many possible suspects, too many unknowns. I need your help.
Oh, my travails have unearthed a fascinating case. 200 years ago, not more than a stone's throw from where we are now, the Ratcliffe Highway murders were committed. The murders were a sensation.
How does this help me?
A shop girl sent out for oysters after midnight returns home to find her employer, Timothy Marr, a linen draper, and his family massacred in their own home. This could be our precedent.
A montage of images, old mottled posters, another old document showing a pit, a statue of Christ, then an eye open wide with terror. Officers carry out a door-to-door on an estate.
Hello there. DC
Whitechapel Police.
I was wondering...
Hi, DC Meg Ryan. I wondered if I could talk to you for a few moments.
About their murders, yeah?
I'm afraid so, yeah.
Everyone's saying, like, the killer isn't human.
Well, why are they saying that?
Because everyone knows that house was like a fortress. No one could get in.
It's not entirely true.
They're saying the killer travels in the dark and gets you when you turn out the lights. Now everyone's afraid of night coming.
Okay.
Nightfall. Chandler's in his office with old reports of the earlier murders. Buchan and Miles are there.
This is all great, Ed, but have you got anything on how the police actually caught the Ratcliffe Highway murderer?
There were no police.
Yes, there were. The Bow Street Runners, I know my history.
The Bow Street Runners' job was to patrol the streets and make arrests, but crucially, they did not know how to investigate or detect crimes. The thing is, the police didn't exist, at least not in a way that we would recognise. There was a parish constable, paid for by the local magistrate. There were the watchmen, paid for by the local guilds. And there were the runners.
No detectives?
No. And no concept of forensics. And a widespread belief that a man's good character was synonymous with innocence.
Chandler observes Miles.
No forensics, good character, walked free. I heard everything, don't you worry.
Buchan looks exasperated. The lights of a train flare on the night. Mansell, Riley and Kent are on the estate.
This whole family's freaking out with the lights on.
Well, I've got three people naming the same suspect.
Who?
Jinn is an ancient Arabic demon.
Hello, please, can we talk to you, please?
Hiya, DC Riley.
Her ID's snatched.
You've just been mugged.
An old woman mumbles to herself in her flat. In the corner of a room, there seems to be a little shrine with religious icons and fetishes. She opens the front door. Kent.
After you, Riley.
Riley leads them in. A beaded curtain hangs in the doorway of a dimly lit room. The woman checks Riley's ID, then flips it shut. A statue of Christ and a carved wooden creature.
I know why you're here and I know what you want to know.
That's lovely. Thank you.
How much do you want what I have?
Well, if your information proves useful to the inquiry, then I'm sure you'll be in line for a small reward.
Well, don't mess me about, love. Up front.
Riley and Mansell go through their pockets and take out their wallets.
Oh, that's all I've got.
The woman glances up at Kent.
No way. Here you go.
Mansell hands over some notes. She grabs them and stuffs them down her cleavage.
I saw the devil walking in Whitechapel.
Chandler's in the deserted incident room. He turns off a desk light. He tidies the room, putting empty sandwich packs into the waste paper basket he's clutching. As he tidies the desks, he studies the whiteboards. He turns off another light and looks down the list of names under Aidan Harris's photo. He clears up as he makes his way round the room. Riley, Mansell and Kent walk in.
Well, you guys are clocked off.
Do you do this every night, sir?
What? No, of course not. It's strange. What are you doing here?
A witness said that she looked out of her back window an hour after the murders happened because she heard all the sirens.
She saw lots of people out on the street heading towards a tailor's shop.
But this is the thing. She saw one bloke going against the flow, going the opposite direction to everyone else in a hurry.
Yeah, and she thought it was very strange because everyone was going to go see what happened except for one man who was going the other way.
And had a limp, too.
Which made it easier to find him on CCTV.
Mansell hands Chandler a DVD and grins, then turns and flicks his tie at Riley.
Told you. Come on.
Footage of people walking down a street at night. A tall figure in dark clothes and a hood limps quickly in the opposite direction. Day, it's pouring. Miles gets out of his car and joins Chandler in the entrance of the police station.
Morning.
Miles. Is everything okay at home?
Yes, why?
Well, the bags under your eyes tell me that you haven't slept very well. You haven't shaved again, which means that you were rushing this morning, probably getting the kids ready for school, which is normally Judy's job, and I bet you haven't had any breakfast.
Oh, don't play the detective on me.
No, I'm not trying to be nosy. I'm just concerned about you, that's all.
Miles bows his head.
Judy's not well.
What?
Women's problems. And her mother had the same symptoms, and it didn't end happily.
He glances up at Chandler, who towers over him. They enter the incident room. Buckland's talking to Mansell. Miles.
What the hell is this?
Okay, phones off, everyone. Usher, lights, please.
Usher.
There's a big screen on one wall.
How do we use history? By not making the same mistakes.
A slide.
In 1811, Margaret Jewell was the shop girl who left the Mars alive to shop for oysters and returned to find them dead. She was a most significant witness, but because she repeatedly fainted during her testimony, the coroner abandoned any attempt to question her properly. Why did she faint? Was she ill? Or did she have something to hide?
Mansell flips the slide.
I put it to you that Margaret Jewell knew the killer and let him in. Thank you. Georgie Fox, sole survivor. Did she let the killer into the house that night?
What do you think he's doing?
Well, he's dug his grave. Now watch him push him into it.
What's her motive? What does she gain from all these murders?
We've looked at her. Financially, she had nothing to gain. There were no romantic relationships either. No grudges, no scores to settle.
And she was locked out of the house. The PC that found her had to break in.
She was lucky not to die that night.
Exactly.
The shop girl was overlooked in the original investigation. Do not make the same mistake again, especially since there was another foul massacre a mere 12 days later. So you need to hurry.
We're taking the history too literally. The cases aren't identical. This isn't another copycat. There's no need to scaremonger.
Charles Manson, 1969, sent his family of disciples to kill for him. They murdered six of the actors Sharon Tate had with the Labby Angus. Slaughtered them too. Multiple victim serial murder is rare, but when it happens, it is a bloodbath. The killer may strike again.
My office now.
Buchan looks crestfallen and trails after Chandler. The others return to their desks.
Have I done something wrong? Surely you can see the sense in what I'm saying. Isn't this why I'm here?
I've worked hard, really hard, to gain the loyalty and trust of my team. I've earned their respect by making tough decisions and taking risks. You're one of those risks. But if I'm undermined, if I'm second-guessed in front of them, I lose all of that.
I meant to cause no embarrassment.
If you have any information, like, for example, an historical precedent of a second murder, you tell me first.
Yes, Joe. Sir.
Chandler opens the door for him. Chandler and Miles are going upstairs.
You having second thoughts now? The minute you gave him a laminated ID, you created a monster.
He's settling in, that's all. Speed bumps.
He's out of the box and you know it.
He's under control. It won't happen again.
They're in the informal interview room with Georgie.
I want you to look at the footage and tell us if you recognise the man with the limp.
Miles turns on the TV with a remote and she watches the street scene.
I don't know him.
You sure? Look again, properly. This is important.
What's the point? If I don't know him, I don't know him.
The man in the CCTV may have murdered everyone you worked with. Don't you want to help?
I don't know any cripples, all right?
Good to see you back to your old self.
She glares at Miles. On the screen, the figure limps along the street. Riley Kent and Mansell enter Salter's building. They stand in the narrow hallway and look around. Kent.
This place really is a fortress. Still a maniac got in. Scary.
Like the killer knocked and Ben Salter knew him. All the locks in the world wouldn't help me if you invited your killer in.
That's like vampires. You have to invite them in and then they bleed you dry. This place is going to need new floors.
Shame. Some of it's been recently restored.
Carpenter's been working here.
Hammers. Hammers.
A man sounding wood in a parking lot.
Mr. Driscoll. D.I. Chandler.
And D.S. Miles.
Yeah?
I'd like to ask you a few questions about Ben Salter.
Oh, God, it's shocking. I can't believe that. It's awful, even for around here.
When did you last see Mr. Salter?
The day of the murders. Yeah, I was there in the morning. I just can't get my head around it.
Did you notice anything unusual that day?
No. I was working on the stairs. No, everything seemed fine.
And where were you that night?
I was at home.
Anyone who could vouch for that?
No, I live alone.
You mind if we examine some of your tools?
Yeah, of course. Which ones from?
The hammers.
Oh, because the killer... Oh.
Driscoll's in his 30s, skinny with short hair. They watch him walk to his van. He doesn't limp.
Can't exactly work without my tools.
I'll return them to you as soon as we possibly can.
He takes hammers from his van and gives them to Miles.
There was something. Mr. Salter wanted the whole place doing with traditional materials and techniques. And then he went and spent a fortune on security, on, you know, window locks and alarms, even though they weren't in keeping.
Why would he do that?
Because he was scared.
A montage, an old news sheet, an etching of a figure with a speech bubble. Murder, murder. Footage of the limping figure. Chandler's in the incident room studying the boards. Riley and Mansell hurry over to him.
So I knew Ben Salter was afraid of.
Who?
Last year he had to go to court. He was summoned as a witness to a mugging of a kid by a local gang. Now six of the gang members were found guilty and sent to young offenders. The leader of the gang was known as Wilkie. Now he served a sentence and returned home to find that his turf had been taken over by a rival gang and was forced out of the area.
He has motive, revenge and a history of violence.
Georgie Fox's page. That's a school trip to Hever Castle, and that's Georgie sitting next to Wilkie.
Wilkie has a grudge. Georgie lets him in.
Good work. Let's find Wilkie.
An interview room.
You'll never let me forget where we are. And because of my history, every time there's a crime, you look me up.
Wilkie, in his 20s, is with his lawyer.
Why do I have to keep answering for what happened years ago?
Statistically, you're likely to reoffend.
Georgie Fox.
What about her?
Good friend, is she?
She's a dark-sided bitch. I haven't seen her since school.
Well, she worked with Ben Salter, Stuart Middleton, Aidan Harris, and Archie Pugh.
No.
No, I won't let you put my name on that.
You were angry at Ben Salter. He put an end to your gang, your little empire. You were forced out of Whitechapel to the arse end of London and you wanted revenge. So you got Georgie Fox to let you in so you could kill them all.
I don't hate Ben Saul. I owe him everything.
Calm down.
Daniel, sit down. Go on.
Wilkie, his brief, and Miles sit down. Chandler seems to study him.
Tell me what you mean.
You know, I should be dead by now. All the men in my family have died on the streets. No one ever made it to 21.
Chandler glances at Miles.
I thought that was my destiny too, so that's the way that I live my life. Then I lost my crew. I moved away. I got a job, I met a girl. And now I've got a baby on the way. It was my birthday last week. I'm 22. Ben Saul wasn't afraid to stand up to me in court. He saved my life.
Shaven-headed Wilkie is escorted downstairs by two officers.
Do you believe in redemption?
Yeah. Anyone can change their life for the better. Just not criminals.
Chandler wanders down to the basement. Buck and sitting with his elbows propped on the desk and his head in his hands.
Ed?
Thank you for coming.
You found something?
A warning from history. You've just arrested Ben Wilkie, but beware. An innocent man hanged himself because of the Ratcliffe Highway murders.
You sure?
The police arrested John Williams because he knew Timothy Marr and he was seen at the Williamsons' house on the night of the second murder. Had no money before the murder and had some silver after it.
Strong circumstantial evidence.
But he was open about visiting the Williamsons' that night and had pawn tickets to account for the money. His connection to the Marrs was tenuous at best.
Read the file.
John Williams committed suicide in prison. Please, Joe, don't let history repeat itself.
Chandler looks pensive and walks out. Night. From his office, Chandler looks up to the incident room and sees the others are leaving. He's going through the file that Buchan gave him. There's an illustration of a man with a clamp round his leg. Kent and Mansell.
Movie night tonight.
Oh yeah, what are you watching?
I never get to watch the films.
I promised the kids would sleep with them tonight. They're scared of the killer bogeyman. Are you, Emerson? Not in the town?
Oh, no, I'm staying in. All my flatmates are out.
On your own? Don't turn the lights out.
Night-night!
Chandler emerges from his office.
Miles, would you like to go for a drink tonight?
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't. Judy, you know.
Of course. Send her my best.
You okay?
Absolutely.
Good night.
Yeah, good night.
Nice skip.
Weary-looking grey-haired Miles heads out past Kent with hunched shoulders. Kent.
Can I do anything, sir?
There's no overtime in it for you.
I don't mind.
Everything all right?
Local people are saying that the kid is some kind of evil spirit, jinn or an aswang that can create itself out of the darkness.
You can't be irrational. You can't start thinking superstitiously. Look. Come with me. Something I want to show you. This is where John Williams, the man who was accused of the Ratcliffe Highway murders, was buried after he committed suicide in prison. He was buried here at a crossroads, so that if his tortured spirit emerged, it would be confused and not know which way to go. They dumped his body in a small pit so he'd feel discomfort for eternity and drove a wooden stake through his heart to prevent his restless soul from wandering.
They thought they captured a bogeyman.
John Williams wasn't a bogeyman. He may have been innocent. Circumstantial evidence. An hysterical public. A terrible fear. They made a mistake.
Chandler walks out into the middle of the crossroads, squats down and puts a hand on the road surface. Montage of an old etching of a man with a stake through his heart. Chandler rises.
We can't afford to be wrong about Wilkie.
So Wilkie finished his shift at the kebab shop and went to wait for the N551.
Well, that bus would take him down the highway and past Ben Salter's at around midnight.
Yeah, but look, Skip. The bus was late. He's still waiting at the time of the murders.
Fast asleep.
Footage of Wilkie at the bus shelter. Dave, the young woman who argued with the cab driver, walks down a busy street.
Can I get one of these, please? Thank you. Cheers.
She buys a newspaper at a kiosk and reads the headline, Tailor Shop Massacre, the Survivor Story. She looks anxious, takes her phone from her bag and scrolls down. Chandler and Miles are following a lab technician at the Forensic Science Service. A young woman comes over, walks past Miles and beams at Chandler.
Lizzie Pepper, hi.
D.I. Chandler.
I'm D.S. Miles.
I couldn't find any blood traces at all, so then I ran tests to see if the tools had been cleaned recently. Negative. Dr. Llewellyn provided us with a mould taken from an imprint in one of the victim's skull and brain. None of the hammers fit. They're all too big.
Miles and Chandler exchange glances.
Oh, well, it's worth a try. Thank you.
Thanks.
Miles trails after Chandler. Lizzie watches with an appreciative smile. Miles turns back and sees the woman who bought the papers at the police station.
Thanks, Jim. Miss Peterson, DC Manson. How can I help?
I'm sorry I didn't come and see her.
Oh, that's okay, you're here now. Hey, just relax. Can I take a seat?
No, thanks. Listen. On the night of the Salter murders, I caught a cab from the Strand, and the driver was just ranting on about how he shouldn't have to drive a cab, but he was cheated out of a lot of money by his brother.
Okay. So what makes you think he's connected?
Well, he was really aggressive and he freaked me out. I didn't feel safe with him, so I asked him to stop the cab and I took a picture of his ID before I ran away.
Marcus Salter's on her phone.
I was just so glad to get away from him. I didn't think about it again until today when I looked at the picture that I took.
Thanks for this. Do you mind if I take a copy?
Who alibied Marcus Salter?
I haven't got to him yet. He's on the list.
We'll move him to the top.
On the balcony of a block of flats, Kent gives a thumbs up and Chandler and two uniformed officers run into the building.
Blanked out the windows.
Get off me! Marcus Salter, arresting you on suspicion of the murder of Ben Salter, Stuart Middleton, Aidan Harris, and Archie Pugh. Mansell, read him his rights.
Yes, sir.
Bag up his things. Come on!
You're saying if you're going to make him a defense, if you do not mention when questioned, something you may rely on tonight to court.
He has photo what?
Photophobia. It's a symptom of a genetic disorder. If he's exposed to bright light, he'll experience a crippling migraine and we won't be able to interview him at all.
Say cab is at night?
Yeah, he sleeps during the day.
The door opens and slim 40-something Salter enters the darkened interview room with his lawyer. He has a slight limp. Miles and Chandler exchange glances. Salter and his brief sit down. Kent, Riley and Mansell are watching from the observation room.
Time is 7 p.m. I'm D.S. Miles.
D.I. Chandler.
And the suspect, please state your name.
Marcus Salter.
Do you want to turn it up a bit? I can't hear it yet. Turn it up a bit.
You, have a limp. Part of the spectrum of my illness. I have weak joints prone to dislocation. Being yanked around and thrown to the ground by you a lot doesn't help. Ben Salter is your half-brother, is that correct?
Yes.
Tell me about him.
I'm not sorry he's dead, if that's what you mean.
Why should I be sorry? Ben ruined my life.
How did he do that?
He was born. He was the perfect, beautiful son, and I was the freak. He got all the love and attention. I got nothing. When I wanted money to see a specialist in Switzerland, my dad said it was a waste. He said I was incurable. But when Ben wanted a fortune for his shop, well, they gave him everything, didn't they?
Are you incurable?
Yeah. My heart is dead. Nothing you can do about that.
Did you kill Ben Salter, Stuart Middleton, Aidan Harris, and Archie Pugh?
I thought about it. But then someone beat me to it.
In the other room, Kent looks disturbed. Salter's led to a cell and shields his eyes from the light of the narrow, starkly lit corridor.
Right, mate, that's you.
Are you afraid of the dark, Constable Pynchon? Should be.
Yeah, I do. I'm used to it. Salter has motive. He's made threats to kill him. We can place him in the area at the time of the murders.
He isn't sorry they're dead either.
No remorse, no confession.
Well, a night in the cell should put things in perspective for him.
He likes the dark, though.
What? He's not sleeping upside down like a bat. Despite his front and bravado, we've got him.
Exactly.
Go home, get some rest.
The team prepares to leave, but Kent seems to hesitate. A blackboard by the cells reads Salter.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
Officer Sean Pitchens in the corridor.
Have you said your prayers, Sean?
Pitchin looks terrified and clutches a crucifix. Miles is having a drink with Chandler in his office. They raise their glasses and Chandler drinks his whiskey. Miles doesn't. Chandler watches him.
How's Judy?
She thinks it's cancer. And it's difficult to tell her otherwise, the way the doctors frown and pat her arm and tell us nothing, except see you after the scan.
And you? How are you coping?
I'm all right.
Come on, look, we've got a whole bottle here.
Miles takes a sip.
Talk.
She's always there. I get home, she's there. If I want to be on my own, she leaves me alone. If I want company, she's by my side. In 15 years, she's never told me what to think. She's backed me up even when she knew I was wrong. She lets me be me. Doesn't make me feel guilty about it. That's why I can't lose her.
Find someone like that's incredible.
Don't get me wrong, she can half nag.
A family's watching telly. A figure scuttles jerkily in a starkly lit room.
Why haven't you ever married?
Chandler looks uncomfortable.
It's personal.
But there are ways nowadays. Civil partnerships.
Oh, no, God. You don't get it at all.
Well, if that's not the issue, then what is?
I'm a very particular man. I like to have things a certain way. I'd rather live alone than try to accommodate someone who doesn't understand that. I can't change. I accept that's the way it is and always will be.
He leans back in his chair and drinks, then his expression changes.
They are trying.
What is it?
The prisoner's escaped, sir. He's gone.
He was there at 10, and when I went to check in just now, he was gone.
From a locked cell?
They follow the pension to Salter's empty cell.
This is impossible. Nobody disappears into thin air.
Well, he has. So where's he gone?
The scuttling figure. The two women are still watching telly. The power's cut.
To go back upstairs and tell everyone what we're going to do next, and right now I don't know what I'm going
to
say.
I have an announcement to make about Judy.
Three more people are dead! Why? Why would you do that?
So where did he go?
It's like he just vanished.
Like a ghost.